As we continue our lessons that we've been looking at, we want to continue looking at this period of time that is between the Old Testament and the New Testament. Of course, we finished up the remainder of the things that had to that pertain to the Old Testament, looking there at the close of the end of the Medo-Persian Empire. We want to just keep in mind some of the things that we've talked about, and as we're looking through these things, we're moving through history rather quickly. We've already covered, just with the Medes and the Persians, by the end of tonight's lesson, we'll have covered over 200 years of history that we have very little recorded about in the Scriptures, and we want to keep these things in mind. As we looked at these things, we noted, of course, the Babylonians took over the Assyrians, the Medo-Persians came in and took over the Babylonians, and as we looked at the Medes and the Persians, of course, Cyrus the Great, Cyrus was the first one to rule there as king of the Medes and the Persians. It was two separate empires, and finally he joined them together. Cyrus gave a decree that allowed the Jews to return to Jerusalem to rebuild the temple. His son Cambyses took over rule after him and was there between 530 and 522 B.C. And keep in mind, it was during the reign of Cambyses that the work on the temple was halted and remained halted until we get to Darius. Cambyses secretly put to death his brother, a fellow by the name of Smerdis, and then while he's in Egypt, trying to take over the African continent there, the northern part of the African continent, he receives word that his brother has taken over the throne. And so he goes back to try and to settle that. And there was a fellow who took over the throne playing as if he was the brother of Cambyses. Darius the Great had him put to death around 521 B.C. and took over. It's during this period of time that we have the work of Haggai and Zechariah. It was during the reign of Darius that the work on the temple resumed, and the work was completed during his reign. The Medes and the Persians empire spread throughout from India all the way to Greece, spreading into Macedon and Thrace, but they were defeated by the Greeks at Marathon in 490 B.C. In 486 B.C., we have Xerxes, the son of Darius, taking over. He attempts to avenge his father's defeat at the hands of the Greeks, going so far as taking over in destroying Athens, conquering the city, burning the Acropolis, but ultimately through failures of his navy and other problems, the Greeks send him packing. He goes back and continues his reign, and of course this is where the story of Esther takes place here during with Xerxes. And then we looked last week at Artaxerxes Longimanus, who ruled from 465 to 425 B.C. It was during his reign that we read of the prophets Ezra, Nehemiah, and Malachi. Ezra, of course, went back to try to get the people to reform and to live according to God's way. Ezra was one that had to try and get them to put away their foreign wives to keep themselves pure. Nehemiah, when he came a good several years later, he comes and tries to get them to rebuild the city walls. And accomplishes that, but he still has the responsibility of trying to turn them back to God once again, trying to get them to remain faithful. He reinstitutes the taxes that were necessary, the giving that was necessary so that the Levites could fulfill their responsibilities there in the temple. Before this, the Levites were having to go back to their homes and work to pay for themselves because the Jews there were not concerned with these things. Malachi is the last one that we have there during this period of time. And he comes in essentially to tell them, you've been told all these things and you're still failing. You're not keeping the things that God has told you to do. Now, it seems that the work of Ezra, Nehemiah, Malachi have some good results. Because we really leave the Jews there with Ezra, Nehemiah, Malachi. That's the last of the information we have from the Bible other than the prophecies that were made during the time of Daniel. And it seems that as a result of the work of Ezra, Nehemiah, and Malachi, as a result of them being in captivity and having seen that God was serious when He said, if you serve Me, I'll protect you. If you don't serve Me, I'll bring someone in and they'll take you captive. Because when we go throughout that period of time, going through the period of time of the Maccabees and on into the time of Christ, we see that the Jews were very careful in watching and partaking of things according to the law, very exact in making sure that they did everything to the strictest letter of the law. And so we can see that there was some good that was done, and we can also see that because we see throughout this period of history of 400 years, God protects the Jews. They, even though, as we'll see some this evening and in the lessons to come, when we look at Alexander the Great and the Grecian Empire, while there are battles that go on, the Jews are pretty much left alone. They're protected in many ways. They're just kind of there floating along, and we see that they're prospering, because when we look at them in the New Testament, we see that Jerusalem is a very rich area. The Jews have spread beyond Jerusalem on up into the area of Galilee, and so we can see that God did do much for them. Now this evening we want to take, it shouldn't take us too long to get through the rest of the Medes and the Persians. And really we're going to, I forgot to turn that light off. Really we're going to see a pattern that's going to begin to continue on throughout this period of history of rulers killing rulers, brothers killing brothers, mothers killing sons, daughters, mothers marrying sons, sisters marrying brothers. This is what we're going to find. It's your typical royal family that we have throughout the history of royalty just about. But we go and begin there with the son of Artaxerxes Longimanus, who his name is Xerxes II. He begins ruling in 425 BC, and he doesn't last for very long. Artaxerxes Longimanus had one legitimate son, Xerxes, and then he had 17 sons from various concubines. And it was one of these sons by one of these concubines, a fellow by the name of Sogdianus, who had Xerxes put to death and took over the rule. Xerxes ruled in 425 BC. Don't forget that, because we're going to be stuck there. He ruled for about 6 months, and he was assassinated by his half-brother, Darius II. I always give Jeff a hard time about how horrible of a brother he was. But when I look at this period of time, I think, man, I got it pretty easy. So I got a few wet willies and noogies and Indian burns. At least he didn't put me to death, or even try to put me to death. But these are all brothers here, half-brothers. And they're just constantly putting one another to death. Amidst all of these murders, Darius marries his half-sister, Parysatis. And they have four sons, the first two being Artaxerxes II, and the second one being Cyrus the Younger. Cyrus is favored by his mother, and Artaxerxes II is favored by his father. When Darius promotes Artaxerxes to being the king there in 405 BC, Cyrus is sent off into the western area to take care of the army in that area. And Artaxerxes II, also known as Artaxerxes Niman, which is a title that was given to him by the Greeks, which means simply memory, because according to historical records, he had a very amazing memory, and they were impressed with it. He was a good ruler and ruled for about 46 years and died an old man. There's some conflicting accounts whether he was 86 when he died or 94. And for that time period, that was living to a pretty good age. But the fact that he died as an older man is really quite impressive, considering the way his uncles and his father acted in their own way. Now, one of the most interesting things there with Artaxerxes II, of course, you had the play between the mother and the father. The mother liked Cyrus. The father liked Artaxerxes. Artaxerxes II became the king. Cyrus was sent off to the western area. Parysatis, the mother of these two, had the wife of Artaxerxes poisoned. The wife's name was Statera. Just motherly love, I guess, would be what you have there. She didn't like him. She obviously didn't like his wife. Of course, he had a number of other concubines. Cyrus, while he's out in the western portion of the Mede of the empire, he gathers together 13,000 Greeks and 100,000 native soldiers. Gathers them together and decides it's time for me to rule. And he makes his march toward Ecbatana and the capitals there. A battle is finally fought there in Cunaxa, which is north of Babylon on the Euphrates River. Now, if you keep in mind that they're coming from Greece. Now, Cyrus has been sent over to this area. He gathers together some Greeks and people of this area and begins to march all the way over here to Cunaxa, where he engages battle with his brother, Artaxerxes II. According to stories that are told, the legends that we have available, Cyrus makes a mad dash toward his brother, trying to put him to death, and is actually able to wound him, but the bodyguards of Artaxerxes put Cyrus to death. With the death of Cyrus, all those that had gathered together, all the 100,000 native soldiers that he had gathered together, is like, well, this is a lost cause, and they go home. And these 13,000 Greeks find themselves in the midst of enemy territory. They've been cut off from their homeland. They've been cut off from food. And this is where we get that interesting story of the March of the 10,000, which is recorded by an eyewitness, Xenophon, who was one of the 10,000, one of the 13,000 Greeks that were gathered together. And it's in his Anabasis, which is Greek for going up. And the reason it's called going up is because they're captured down here, these 10,000 Greeks about by this time, captured down here, and they fight their way up. They're in the heart of the Medes and the Persians. They fight their way up to the Black Sea and then fight their way back to Greece. And this was is really an amazing story in their ability to do that. And one of the things that came from this was the Greeks had been angry with the Medes and the Persians since Darius the first had come in and conquered them, and then his son had come in and destroyed one of their famous cities, destroyed the Acropolis, and so they weren't happy. And seeing these Greeks march their way back out of the midst of this empire showed them the weakness of the Medes and the Persians. Just imagine if you're the Greeks over here. This is the tiny little area of Greece. And you've got this major empire, you think, well, there's nothing we can do about that. It's kind of like Cuba looking at the United States going, I'm going to take over the United States. But then imagine if there was a number of individuals that got caught right there in Kentucky and marched their way out with what would seem to be relative apparent ease, you could see that it was beginning to be weakened. In fact, the armies of the Medes and the Persians had become nothing more than mercenaries. They were bought soldiers. And what's so great about bought soldiers? If you got enough money, you can buy them off and you can turn them against. And this was something that we find the Medes and the Persians begin to suffer because of this. This is really the beginning of the downfall of the Medo-Persian Empire. As we continue looking, the son of Artaxerxes II, Artaxerxes Ochus, was the son of the wife that had been poisoned by Artaxerxes Ochus's grandmother. He apparently was a student of his family history and decided, I don't want anybody coming to try to kill me. And he had 80 of his closest relatives executed to make sure that he solidified his right to be ruler over the Medes and the Persians. This was exactly what we begin to find with the Medes and the Persians. And as we continue looking throughout this history, we'll find that this is a theme that will be taken up time and time again. Now, apparently, he was a relatively effective leader. He was really one of the last of the good leaders the Medes and the Persians had. He conquered Phoenicia and Tyre, which if we go back to that map, Phoenicia is right here. Tyre is down here, closer to where Jerusalem was. Those were two of the major port areas of the Mediterranean Sea. And so when you controlled Phoenicia and Tyre, you controlled the eastern section of the Mediterranean Sea. He also went down and reconquered Egypt. Egypt had fought for its independence under earlier rulers, and he goes down and reconquers Egypt. He even sent aid to a king of Thrace who was under attack by a fellow by the name of Philip of Macedon, who is most famous for his son Alexander the Great. And so we really begin to see where the Greeks are coming together. Now, as we look at Artaxerxes Ochus there towards the end of his reign, one of his own generals, Bagoas, who was a vice regent in the area, poisoned him and appointed his son Arses to take his place. The idea was, if I put this son in there, I can control him, I can tell him what to do, and therefore I can rule as a puppet ruler. He wasn't of the royal lineage, so therefore he couldn't do it himself, but he could control him. After a couple of years, we see here that Arses showed that he had the willpower to reign on his own, and Bagoas kills him and places Darius III there on the throne. Now, Darius III is a cousin. Remember, we looked with Artaxerxes Ochus, and he had 80 of his nearest relatives put to death. Well, that's how far Bagoas had to go to find someone that was of a royal lineage. And he thought once again, I can have this guy, he can be my puppet ruler, I can have control over him, and therefore I can rule during this period of time. Now, as Bagoas saw that he was not having the control over Darius III as he thought he could, he decided, well, I've poisoned the father, I've poisoned the son, I'll poison him. And Darius III finds out about this and even goes so far as to have Bagoas drink his own poison. Darius III became king the same year that Philip of Macedon was assassinated. Like I said, this was really going to be a rather quick lesson as we look at these things and see that we're right on the cusp of the beginning of the Grecian Empire. Alexander the Great is famous throughout history for within just a couple of years. He conquered all of the Medes and the Persians. He conquered the majority of the known world at that period of time. And as we continue looking at these things and note these things, we want to keep in mind the Persians have been in power for about 200 years. And it seems that that seems to be kind of a limit of power for mighty nations. A couple hundred years seems to be the longest that they can rule, that they can keep their power intact. And you know, we're just a little bit over 200 years old here in the United States. And we can see where many of the problems that we see with the Medes and the Persians, the crumbling within, the problems that we have there, that we're finding those in our own country. And so, once again, as we look at these things, we want to keep in mind, God is protecting. You look at how the power is changing hands so many times. You look at just over a period of about 50 to 100 years, you go through a number of rulers. You go through a number of father and sons. In just a matter of a couple of years, you go through about four or five. And in all these, the Jews are being protected. Why? Because they finally have learned their lesson. God's serious. When He says, "Obey me," obey Him. When He says, "Keep yourself pure," you keep yourself pure. You remember when we looked in the book of Malachi and we looked in the writings of Nehemiah and others, that they told them essentially, you know, you're going out and you're eating, but you're leaving the table full. You're taking a drink and you're still thirsty. Why? Because you're not serving the Lord. You're not faithful in your service. And God is going to continue to keep you from being able to be prosperous. And as we look throughout this period of history, we can see that the Jews were in fact very prosperous after this period of time. After they finally heeded the words of the prophets and listened to the things that God would have them to do. And so really that's all that we have for this evening. I wanted to get this in last week, but I didn't want to rush through Nehemiah. I didn't want to rush through Ezra, and I didn't want to rush through Malachi, because we see so much there that I think can be applied to the local congregation, to us as Christians, in the things that God expects of us. But one thing we want to keep in mind is that in all these things, God is ruling in the kingdoms of men. All of these empires that are rising and falling, all we have to do is go back to the book of Daniel and look there in the prophecy that was given there during the reign of Nebuchadnezzar, the first of the Babylonian kings. And he had that prophecy, that vision of this great image. This image that represented four empires. The first being the Babylonians. The next one being the Medes and the Persians. The next one being the Grecians. And finally, an unnamed empire that we can look through history and see very clearly is the Roman Empire. And it was that in that prophecy that God said in the days of those of the last empire, He would set up His kingdom that no one would be able to destroy. Now we've worked our way through the Babylonians. We've worked our way through the Medes and the Persians. And we're sitting solely in historical area here. We're looking at things that we have to turn to the books of 1st and 2nd Maccabees, the writings of Josephus to really receive any kind of information. And if you go and look at the dates on some of these that I've given you, you might find that they're off by a couple of years depending on which one you look at. I tried to get the most reputable dates I possibly could, but they're all approximate. And so keep that in mind. But I hope that you'll continue to study with us as we look at the Greeks, because it is during the Grecian Empire that the fullness of time comes to bear. It is during the time of Alexander the Great, as we're going to look next Sunday evening, where he institutes the Grecian language, which is the common language of the Jews there during the days of Christ. He institutes a Grecian way of life. He really brings a large number of people together in a simple fashion. And this was really, he was aided in this by the work of the Medes and the Persians before. But we want to keep these things in mind. Once again, God is watching over His people. That even when things look their worst, can you imagine being a Jew there in Jerusalem and hearing that your king has been murdered and someone took his place? And then just within a couple of months, that king has been murdered and someone else has taken his place. And you can look throughout history and see that each king looks at you in a different way. And to think, what about my safety? You know, we look at when a new president comes into power, we wonder, how is this going to affect us? And just imagine a supreme ruler like a king. And the only thing the Jews could do was put their trust in God. And that's something that we can see throughout this period of time. They trusted in God. Unlike any generation before them, they had a trust in God. And we need to have that same trust in God. Perhaps you're here this evening. You've never obeyed the gospel of Jesus Christ. Then you are outside the protection that God has promised of us. If you've obeyed the gospel, then God is there with you. He's there giving you the strength that you need, as we talked about this morning. But we have to do what we can with what He's given us. And it's all in what we will do. If we will serve Him, He will bless us in what we do. And so we offer the invitation of the Lord Jesus Christ to any who have not obeyed the gospel, who have need to return in faithfulness. Be like the Israelites. Understand, as we talked last week, they were willing to admit their sin. This long, drawn-out letter admitting the error of their ways. And we need to be willing to do that individually and admitting that we are in desperate need of God. Whatever your situation might be, if you would, come forward now as we stand and as we sing.